The playoffs are here, people. NBA and NHL both going at the same time. That's the best 2 weeks in the sports calendar, right? And it goes fast. More games, more angles, more ways to be right, and more ways to win. That's the fun. MyBookie.ag has it all. And right now for new players, use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. And if your first bet doesn't hit, they refund it up to $500 back as free play one-time rollover, plus $25 in casino credit automatically. That's called insurance, my friends. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. This is the ZabeCast, from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go! Here we go! Wednesday, August 5th, 2026. Thank you for downloading. I am now coming to you plausibly live from the lovely and historic Ambassador Hotel on the western edge of downtown Milwaukee, a vintage hotel built in the 1920s, right next to the famous Rave nightclub, where I'm sure many of you in Milwaukee and southeast Wisconsin have probably gone to a concert there once or twice or more. Right next to or just down the block from the illustrious Marquette University, and within earshot, if you can strain yourself, to hear a home run shot from the Brewers' home field, American Family Field, formerly the artist known as Miller Park, which I really wish it was still known as Miller Park. No offense to American Family Insurance, a quality insurance company, but boo, boo. Milwaukee is known as the Brew City, so it was great when it was called Miller Park. Tonight, I'll be there with my boy Wolfie, who owns Henry Flock's restaurant as well as Natty Oaks, or if he doesn't own them, he's a part owner, he runs them. Huge baseball fan, lunatic, love him. Got my boy Gerds coming with me, my Metallica loving banger supplier over the years. And so, yeah, it's going to be great. And back in this hotel, it's interesting, when I first started this, you know, chapter in my career doing radio in Milwaukee on a full-time basis, it was this hotel that Colleen Valcoon put me up in back when I started in 2019. So it's bringing back all the memories and all the feels of when I first started. So it's kind of like a interesting full circle kind of thing. But, you know, life is funny like that sometimes. Anyhow, all the summer landmarks of the slow season are getting ticked off one by one, such as Major League Baseball All-Star Game, tick, done. Final major of the year, the British Open, done and dusted. Trade deadline, that's now done. And the only thing left is for people to argue over and to, you know, analyze what was offered that was rejected for Scooble by either the Brewers or the, you know, Rays or whoever was going after him. Doesn't matter. It's done. And it is what it is. And now we've got NFL training camps are all open. And the next thing up is the Hall of Fame weekend in the NFL and the Hall of Fame game. The very first tackle football game in 7, I guess. It's been a long swim, hasn't it? And the game is Thursday night. I should have known it was Thursday night. I'm like, I thought this thing used to be on Saturday. Or the ceremony was Saturday, the game was Sunday night. When do they change that? And I'm embarrassed to say it was 2017, but I looked it up. So it's been on Thursday for a long time. I kind of got lost in the schedule of when things roll out. So Thursday, it's the game. That's the entree, or that's the appetizer. The entree, the Hall of Fame weekend with the inductees, happens on Saturday. But the game on Thursday is Panthers-Cardinals at Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium in Canton, Ohio. Carson Beck will start for the Arizona Cardinals, the rookie out of Miami, who has been much maligned over his college career. We'll see how he looks in the first action of the year. And of course, please, people, you can wager on the Hall of Fame game, but you should not wager on the Hall of Fame game. If you do, by the way, you should always do it at mybookie.com, your home for responsible wagering all season long. Promo code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to unlock all the benefits and promotional specials. And also, winning is nice, but getting paid, as Mr. X says, is even nicer. My bookie makes it easy to get paid, unlike some other places. And you're probably saying, Mr. X, Is he still alive? Yes, he's alive. He'll be back for the football season. He's currently, I guess, shirtless, sunburnt, and trying to fix the second boat that he bought without telling his wife up in Maine. So, yeah, we're getting there, people. We're getting there. Three Saturdays from this coming Saturday is week zero in college football. North Carolina versus TCU from Dublin at noon gets things going. That'd be Dublin, Ireland. Then it's San Jose, USC at 3 o'clock on NBC. North Carolina State versus Virginia on ESPN at 3:30. Memphis at UNLV at 10 o'clock on Fox. And we are off to the races as they are going to discuss in college football a 16 or possibly 24 team playoff to expand to in the near future. Also, this, you know, Save College Sports Act, which was supposedly dead on arrival, has been resurrected at the last minute, mostly by lobbying from the two powers in college football. That would be the Big Ten and the SEC. It's essentially a duopoly that runs the sport, and the two of them, while they are rivals, the Big Ten and the SEC, they know they want to keep everyone else as poor as possible and keep their members in the driver's seat, so to speak. That's why this new proposal has lifted the cap to spend on NIL from the $20 million it's at now to like $44.5 million. And the number, they say, is not just random. They know that a $44 million athletics department budget payroll is what the big boys can afford, but everyone else is going to struggle and choke on and wheeze on, and so therefore they're going to have an advantage. We shall see how the season goes. There's also a top 25 out. I don't have it in front of me. Doesn't matter. Just clip and save to see how wrong it is by the time the dust settles on college football at the end of the year. All right, let's start with Tony Romo. I didn't talk about this since it came down, but Tony Romo, I don't think I did. I went back and listened to a couple of podcasts. I'm like, I think I might have missed talking about this. Tony Romo put on indefinite leave by CBS and his bosses. This was rather stunning. It came about a week or so, or at least 4 or 5 days after his arrest and the body cam footage coming out of him looking disheveled and certainly not sober. I don't know if he would say he looked drunk, but he didn't look completely together, that's for sure. And there was sort of speculation like, what is CBS going to do? And after about 5 days, they're like, you know what? We're putting him on indefinite leave. I think the indefinite is because they don't want to just say, well, he's going to miss the first week of the season and then have critics go, that's it? That's all? And if they do suspend him for a specific amount of time, it sort of implies that they have already rendered him guilty. The indefinite suspension kind of means, well, he's going to have to deal with this going forward. He's got a court date in mid-September. He would have already done 2 games by then for CBS. But I think it's clear that they have not been happy with the direction Romo's taken in terms of not being very sharp, of not putting in the work, of not taking the job seriously despite being paid $18 million a year. And you can understand why the network would be a little bit, cheesed off by that. So they could be looking to get out of the Romo business. Now, they're probably going to almost certainly have to pay him what's left of his $70-plus million. I'm not an attorney, though. I haven't seen the language of his contract. They might settle for half of that. Who knows? He might get knocked down to a lesser crew, although that seems counterproductive. If you still have to pay him $18 million, and you know he used to be your number one guy, then why are you going to put him on the B or the C team of your announcers? It, of course, would make it awkward then for the guy who's his new partner. I wonder if Nance has done any lobbying to try to help save Romo, if he is indeed in jeopardy. I know that Jerry Jones has pretty much come out strongly on Romo's side. Yeah, Tony, I got the highest regard for Tony, and I know we all make mistakes, and we're just going to have to see how it comes. Who knows what he said exactly, but he has definitely supported Romo in this. But it's interesting. Portnoy for Barstool says he's never getting the job back. Here is his quote. Duh, CBS wanted to get rid of him. The decision was made within 0.2 of a second of this incident happening. Not quite true. So they were clearly looking for an out, and Romo let him through the door. It's a no-brainer. If they thought Romo was doing a good job and they wanted to keep him, then they would keep him at his job. Guys have survived way more than this with no issue. That is so true. They wanted to get rid of him, no doubt. He'll never get his job back. He may be at CBS, because maybe, I don't know what the legality of it is, but he'll never get that number one chair back. Never. If that turns out to be the case, and if it turns out that he does forfeit some of that guaranteed money, it's one of the all-time idiotic bag fumbles you've ever seen. And, just a great lesson for everybody. Whether you're getting paid $18 million a year or $18 an hour, treat your job with the utmost respect and care if you like it. If you don't give a shit, want to get fired, fine. But if you like your job, remember, protect the paycheck first. Everything else is second. Over at Fox, they've officially announced their first broadcast pairings for the coming season. This is, again, we're getting the forks and the knives and the napkins. We're laying it out. We're setting the table here for the feast that is going to be football. I don't think I need to say this right now. We're way premature, but Kevin Burkhart, Tom Brady, Aaron Andrews, and Tom Rinaldi will have the Washington at Philly game on Fox as their first game of the year. So Commanders and Eagles getting the A-team treatment there. Joe Davis, Greg Olson, Pam Oliver on Atlanta, Pittsburgh. Adam Amin, Drew Brees, Christina Pink, Chicago at Carolina. Kenny Albert, Jonathan. Are we doing this for, like, we're not doing this now, are we? All right, fine. Kind of get excited, kind of getting caught up for this. John Riggins has been added as an official media partner, media commentator, employee of the Washington Commanders. Of course, Riggo was a Redskin, has gone into the Hall of Fame as a Redskin. All his great highlights are of him as a Redskin. And of course, all the great imagery and logos have that, you know, famous Blackie Wetzel Redskins logo. Well, the other day, there was a photo that came out. The Commanders celebrated Riggo's birthday, and they put a picture of him at training camp with a sport coat with a silky burgundy liner and Riggo flashing it open to show the Redskins logo on the inside of the jacket. And my man Al Galdi says, we've gone from the NFL censoring the logo to now Washington itself posting a photo of the greatest running back in franchise history, proudly displaying the logo. Progress, says Galdi. He's right. Let's hope it continues. I mentioned on yesterday's pod about how I couldn't believe I was agreeing with Democrats over, hey, if these grocery stores want to have self-checkout, there should be a discount for self-checkout. We should be cut in on the savings. I didn't say take all the savings, just a portion of it. 1%, 2%, something. A stick of butter as a thank you? I don't know. Well, somebody asked, wouldn't this just lead to less cashier jobs? What's more important, jobs or affordability? Seems like you can't have both. Somebody responded, and I don't know if this is true. It's too good for me to check. I don't want to check it. I don't want to find out. Snopes says, now this is totally bullshit. I want this to be true. But somebody tweeted out that the guy who invented dial telephones, you know, the primitive you have to be of a certain age to have used a dial telephone, and I am, and I did. The guy who invented dial telephones that let you directly call somebody by their number and avoid what was then a switchboard that was manned by humans, people, mostly women, that would say, hold please, and they would patch you in to where you needed to go. The guy who invented the dial telephone put 250,000 phone switchboard operators out of work. This was the highest paying position for women in the U.S. at the time. The guy who invented it was not an engineer, not an electrician, but rather a mortician. See, there were two funeral homes in the town he served, his funeral home and a rival's. The owner of the rival funeral home had a wife who worked as a switchboard operator. So anytime anyone called for a funeral home or his funeral home, she would just route the call to her husband, leaving the other guy wanting for business. So he invented the dial phone so customers could explicitly end around the switchboard operators and call someone directly. I just love this story. That sounds like it could plausibly be true, so I'm just going to hope that it is and keep moving. I talked about Shedeur Sanders and his low Madden rating. So far, Browns camp going great. Shedeur looks like ass. Deshaun Watson got booed today. But somebody points out that Shedeur Sanders might be low-key the best quarterback you can have if you want to have an absolutely terrible year into what is going to be a generational quarterback class this winter. Here's why. They said he's terrible. He has almost no discernible physical talent. Mentally, he's a couple beats behind. Shedeur is one of the worst starting QBs I've ever seen in my life. Yet the people adore him. He's a big name, and people who don't actually watch college football heard that he was supposed to be good. So you lose no goodwill by starting him, and you actually gain a bunch. By starting Sugar, you essentially guarantee yourself a top five pick while giving the fans exactly what they want on Sundays, at least a portion of the fan base. They're giving you cake, letting you eat it, and they're thanking you for doing it. I sure hope Arch Manning is worth it, because we're going to have to watch a lot of terrible football this year as teams pursue old Arch Manning. Now, the funniest part of this post from obviously a Browns fan, I've never heard this term before. He said, Shedeur Sanders is low-key the ideal tank commander. A tank commander. I'd never heard that. So if you're trying to tank, you need a guy to lead the tank. And you can't get much more ideal than Shedeur because of those factors. He's the ideal tank commander. One last training camp nugget. Matt LaFleur said that rookie kicker Trey Smack, greatest name ever, who has been struggling so far in camp with no competition, by the way, is simply going to be a work in progress. He said, this is not our first time with a rookie kicker. I know there's going to be some good and some bad, and there's somebody he's going to want back, some kicks that he wants back. Also, and this is what I wanted to bring up because I talked about it yesterday, LaFleur confirms that he told the referees not to signal misses or makes. He joked that he wanted to make the media's job harder. Well, okay, it is actually hard to tell from the sideline if the kicks are in or out. It's a weird sort of parallax kind of a deal, but yeah. Thanks, LaFleur. I don't know if that's going to help the kid or not, but yeah. You pay these refs $40 or whatever they're getting paid to stand around and basically not referee. The only thing we could have used was just put your hands up if it's good. That'd help because you're standing under the goalpost. Oh, you're not going to do that? Oh, because you don't want to make the kicker nervous, or you just want to make us work harder? Thanks. Thanks for nothing. Coming up, man, we got a lot of business to talk about. LIV Golf on the verge of bankruptcy. Gianni Infantino is hanging on by a thread at FIFA after his botched plan to sell off 20% of the entire tournament. And then you've got baseball and the potential lockout and the dynamics of the trade deadline with the Dodgers looming large as the team that is ruining baseball. We will talk to our friend, Georgetown University professor of sports business, Marty Conway, next. You are listening to the Zabecast. All right, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a blackjack guy. Always have been. It's the one casino game where your decisions actually matter. Hit or stand, double down, split. You're not just watching a slot machine and hoping for the best. MyBookie.ag has live dealer blackjack. Real person, on camera, dealing cards in real time. And a full casino beyond that. Roulette, crap, slots, poker, all of it right on your phone. New players get $25 in casino credit just for making a first deposit. Use promo code ZABE. Go try the tables on them. mybookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Welcome back to the ZABEcast. Joining us now, Georgetown University professor of sports marketing and business, Marty Conway. Hello, Marty. We've got money and we've got intrigue. We got palace coups. We've got your favorite golf league, LIV, teetering on the brink. I don't even know where to begin with. A lot of stuff going on, right?
How do you pace me as my favorite golf league? There's only one golf league we know. There's other fledgling golf opportunities, but really only the PGA Tour.
Look at how Marty Conway is slowly slinking out of the room for LIV, he was once a champion of on this podcast. You know my listeners were not going to let me not hold you to the fire on this.
I know. Look, I have no interest in whether LIV survives or not. I only know of upstart new businesses, entrepreneurs, and just to get into it, LIV is trying to LIV for 2.0. Clearly, 1.0 was not the success that anybody had thought. And so what do? You either fold or you try to make a 2.0. And that's what Scott O'Neill, who's a seasoned business person, by the way, who's had great success in American franchise business and sports. But it's not clear what the plan is for 2.0, except to bring in new money, replace the Saudi money with other private equity money, and turn it into almost a regular golf league with 72 hole events and, you know, some other things like that. But I think it's questionable now, where does it fit in the ecosystem of a year-round golf calendar? That's the question now.
Scott O'Neill is well-respected, correct?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, like he's actually doing his level best to try to figure this out. He's kind of like Indiana Jones trying to replace the priceless artifact with a rock on the pressure-sensitive plate, you know, like, let's get the new money here, and then we get the Saudis out of it. The biggest issue is going to be the money still owed to a number of stars, namely John Rahm. Word is Rahm may have upwards of nine figures still due to him in deferred money. And if the league declares bankruptcy, he's going to have to get in line. And it's going to be a long line. What happens to Rahm? And did he sign a bad deal if he is indeed owed a lot of money?
Well, remember when Wayne Gretzky left the NHL for the WHA? That was the question. Would he ever see his money? You know, was he just chasing the money at that point? He was one of the first. I mean, there were guys that left for the ABA and, you know, for other sport leagues like that. But Gretzky was kind of the first that you would say, oh, my gosh, that's the top player in his sport leaving. Somehow it just tends to work out. You know why? Because they have talent. And some league or association or tour wants that talent in their stable, and they're willing to cut a deal. So while he may lose some down the road, he may not get 100 cents on the dollar. But I suspect if John Rahm is the player that he's been internationally respected, whether it's the PGA Tour or somewhere, people will want John Rahm in the field. That's probably good for him, but that's generally what it is talent finds its way. There were a number of players in the LIV Tour who were questionable with their talent. I think we can say that. They may not find a home ultimately without starting over again. But I suspect somebody like John Rahm would welcome him back, and he'd figure out a way to earn out his nine figures or whatever he's expecting to make over the next several years.
Assuming that there's a pathway for him back, and I'm sure the tour will create one, and I think his talent and or his past accomplishments will help grease the skids to get him back. I don't believe anyone that says what a terrible deal, what a mistake it was for Rahm, because he will have pocketed, if you believe the reports, upwards of $300 million, lost $100 million because they pulled the plug, and he'll eventually be back on tour. That $300, Marty, is still way more than he could have earned on the PGA Tour in that span.
Yeah, I suspect when somebody like him and his agents and representatives went, that was their calculation. John, if we're going to do this, this has to exceed what you could make in 10 years on the tour or somewhere like that, and get personal services contracts or other kinds of things that would be more enforceable than just taking something, you know, that again, like you said, has a trapdoor potential bankruptcy where there's a long line of creditors from players to tournaments to vendors, you name it, of cities, counties, states that would be looking for a payout if they went that route.
All right, between now and the end of September, it's going to be a wild ride with LIV, so let's buckle up. Let's turn to FIFA and Gianni Infantino. This plan that he just uncorked, seemingly out of the blue, is one of the wildest things I think I've ever seen in sports business. Some assume, Marty, that he already had the votes in his pocket. Otherwise, why would he spring this on some 201 different independent football associations worldwide? Turns out that Gianni either didn't have the votes or he was way too confident, because now the tide is completely turned. He could be out. What is Marty Conway's take on what Infantino did and what FIFA's attempt was?
So let's back up and talk about what he was really trying to do. He was trying to take FIFA, which is a nonprofit entity, right? Like the NFL used to be, nonprofit entity. And he was trying to turn that into more value, as we say in the business, monetization of the platform. And so he was going to take the Men's World Cup basically out, apart from FIFA, and commercialize that in a way to privatize that and then sell a portion of that to these various investors who were lined up to do. And so he was looking somewhere between $4 and $5 billion overall. Now, in his mind, what was going to happen to that? That money was going to be split over the 210 plus football federations around the world, from the smallest in the Caribbean to the largest in Europe. I think there's going to, you know, if there's going to be a 30 for 30 of some days about this, this is what we're going to read about, was why the timing. Number one, Infantino is up for his final contract in March of 2027 is when the next FIFA Congress meets. He can be elected to one more term and then he's term limited out. So why was he doing that at this point? A lot of what happens here is you have this broad, a disparate group of federations. Like I said, you have the smallest. So if you have a small federation in the island somewhere and $40, $50, $60 million changes their entire football future. Whereas in England, $40 or $50 or $60 million additional is a drop in the bucket. And so I think what you were seeing was he thought that he had more support in some of those. So the two largest confederations in FIFA are UEFA, Europe, and Africa, CAF. They both have about 55, roughly, national federations as a part of it. That's how Sepp Blatter got elected over and over again. He was able to put the Asian Federation and the African Federation together to get those votes. So I think that's what Infantino was thinking. If I have the Asia Federation and maybe the African Federation, they're going to outvote the Europeans, who would not want something like this. So it was a bit of a gambit. Clearly, he did not have the kind of support or votes that he needed. And now I think there's a question as, does he get a vote of no confidence going forward? And can he stand for re-election in March? Can he get enough votes to be re-elected after this? So global football has a way of doing this to themselves. They tried this a few years ago with the Super League. Again, you know, the European fans and European clubs and European nations all voted down very quickly, stomping their feet, rushing the gates. But that's what he was trying to do, is he was trying to spread these dollars over the 200 plus federations and not be so concentrated in, say, Europe, for example.
If I may put on my naked capitalist hat here, Marty, I don't think it was a terrible idea, because FIFA, which has been more like an administrator as a not-for-profit entity, they set up the tournament, they run the tournament, they collect the monies, negotiate the TV monies, then they disperse it to all the teams in the tournament, and they put some into, you know, some development programs or whatnot, but they're not trying to make money. the event got so big and it was such a hit here in the US. It's a monster event that is being underdeveloped financially. So they probably, it's probably time to professionalize the World Cup, but I guess there's too much tradition, too much of the soccer culture saying, we don't want that, or at least we're not ready for it yet.
Yeah, so you're right. And within global football, there's two federations, confederations, that have won the World Cup, Europe and South America. That's it. Everybody else is, thanks for coming. You get to the quarterfinals, semifinals, move on, right? So, and Europe is the most powerful at 55. So the South American only has about 10, 12, 14 soccer federations in there. So there's so much power in Europe, and they have the Champions League. They have their own sort of business going on, and they really don't want to see that disrupted along the way. And they do not want to share revenues with more of the have-nots, if you will, in global football. But you're right in your first statement that you made, that bringing it to the North America with 48 teams spread over 35 some days, now over 100 matches, they literally took that, doubled their revenues. And now, again, United States and North America has shown the world from a sports perspective, this is how you commercialize your sport. You do it here in this country, and then you try to export it elsewhere. And I do. I think they realized, hey, this is much bigger opportunity than anyone's ever thought of. And can we do something more than tickets, sponsorships, television rights, hospitality, et cetera? Are there other revenue opportunities that we should exploit? But everyone faces this, right? Whether it's the NFL with private equity, the NBA with private equity, the NBA with an in-season tournament, constantly looking for these ways to capitalize on some opportunity that seems to have like shown a little bit of green shoots along the way financially.
All right, let's turn to baseball. The trade deadline came and went. Tarik Skubal went to the Dodgers as expected. There is great caterwauling and many people predicting this only sealed the fate that there will be a monster lockout, major work disruption, and maybe no baseball played at all.
I think for that specific question, I'd say no, and here's why. I see three phases to what looms ahead for baseball, and I'll put a percentage on this. In terms of a lockout in December when the CBA expires, 100%. There's not going to be any prediction market that's going to take anything less than that. There's nothing for either side to necessarily win by settling in December. I don't think it's ever really happened when they've had this kind of a circumstance. So, you know, maybe no winter meetings. There's certain things that may not happen that would be on the baseball calendar. The next thing that comes up is the beginning of spring training, which normally would be mid-February or so, right, for a full 6 weeks of spring training. I think you're looking at 85% of not starting spring training when you normally would. Most people think spring training is too long anyhow. We've had experiences in the past where we've had shorter spring training. We then modify the pitcher schedule into the season. We take it there. Then you start to look at 2 weeks before the regular season would open or 3 weeks before, you know, mid-March, let's say, roughly. Now I think your odds are higher than 50%, but I would not go as high as the previous two in terms of its interruption. That's when everybody's economics start to be threatened because players do not make a salary during spring training. As we know, they make a per diem. There are no games for the owners to market. They have games coming up in late March or April. That's when the negotiation typically gets serious. And so I don't think the Skubal trade or his relocation or whatever the Dodgers are going to pay, this is baked. The owners have been on this island for about a year and a half, and now they are locked and ready. Now, this is what they say. They say they want a salary cap. I'm not sure from a negotiation standpoint why you would talk about your most extreme position that you desire to, because then anything that you don't get short of that looks like you came up short, right? And so I'm not sure that the salary cap is really what they will be negotiating about. I think they will be looking at other areas of cost certainty where owners can take more cost out of the business. Whether it's in draft picks or international draft for players or other areas like that. Because I just don't see, first of all, before you get the owners and players to agree, typically you have to have the owners and owners agree. Don Fehr was excellent at this. He would really not start negotiating until the owners had come together on what their priorities were. And then they would sit down at the table to work that out. So I think that's what the next 6 or 8 months looks like for baseball. It's going to be another rough road. But I do think there's going to be periods where it starts to look like, okay, are we going to get serious here about the economic loss that each side could incur?
I think the thing that's going to make it so annoying is that it's going to take forever for one side to get itchy and the other side to get twitchy, that it's going to be so painfully just sitting around like, okay, it's going to be a stare off well into the spring. And it ain't going to be real for anybody until March. It's going to feel like the last time when they cut out a chunk of the spring training schedule because nothing was getting done till the last minute. Only this time the stakes are a lot higher. So it's not going to be fun this winter.
No, it won't. I mean, if you follow baseball and you're interested or you have to sell baseball or whatever, it's going to hurt your economics, whether you're Florida, Arizona, or whatever your connection to the game is. Expect your economics to be squeezed, if not eliminated, during the course of this winter and into spring.
All right, last one. Roger Goodell, his contract is up this coming winter. Yeah. What are the chances he gets another deal to stay on as the commissioner?
So we just talked about three situations where leadership was challenged, right? LIV and FIFA and MLB. In the meantime, Roger Goodell and the NFL continue to sail on relatively calm waters. Yes, I do think he gets a new contract in March. I suspect it will be for 3 years. It would take him into his early 70s. And I think they will use that time to determine who is the next logical person. But it will get them through two things. It will get them through this interim media opportunity they have with CBS and maybe open some other contracts. And it will probably get them through a labor deal into 2030. And so I think Roger signs up for another three-ish years. And the NFL just sails along while everybody else has their, you know, public struggles with economics. Football and the Shield continue to power through.
The king stays the king, in other words, as the NFL continues to print money with no regard for anyone else. What a league and what a job Goodell has right now, and it looks like he's going to get to keep it for a while longer. Marty Conway, Georgetown University, professor of sports marketing and business. You can find him on Twitter at Marty Conway. Spell like you think it should be spelled. Don't make me hold your hand on that. Always a pleasure, my friend. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, Zabe. Good to be with you. Thank you.
All right, let's end on two stories, two crazy stories. One crazy good, one crazy stupid. What are you doing? Let's start with the stupid. BMW, which I always thought was this very high concept, high value, high principle, you know, the ultimate driving machine company, has done something insanely schlocky with all of its cars. Apparently, BMW signed a marketing deal with the studio that made Spider-Man, Brand New Day. And when their BMWs made after 2020 fire up, every one of them plays a short video trailer on the navigation screen for Spider-Man, the movie, Brand New Day. Just takes over your display, whether you wanted it or not. That is insane. Now, if you're a BMW owner, are you going to suddenly swear off the ultimate driving machine? Ooh, the Germans, the Americans are mad at us, the Germans, for doing this. I don't know if this ad pops up once and then it's done. One could argue, hey, okay, one time. It was a one-time shot. Come on. Well, I'll let you know about this cool movie. There, it's on your screen. Okay. It's 30 seconds. Relax, people. But it's the principle of it. It's the invading what should be yours. Now, BMW and I believe Mercedes have been for a while now pushing subscriptions to certain features on their cars, such as, oh, you wanted a heated steering wheel and ventilated seats? Yes, that's $9.99 a month. And we'll unlock that feature remotely for your BMW. I couldn't possibly think about owning a vehicle that was that way. It would be so offensive to think about. I'm paying a monthly subscription for my steering wheel. You kidding me? So absolutely dumb by BMW to do that. And I'm sure a lot of people are pissed. Now to the crazy amazing. Elon Musk is a Nazi, say some, or he's a guy who is going to give millions of people who are currently blind the ultimate gift, the gift of sight. Or he's a Nazi who's also going to give people the gift of sight, but he's still a Nazi, some would say. Neuralink has been one of Elon Musk's projects for years now. I heard about Neuralink 10, 15 years ago. And they're like, yeah, we're going to rewire the brain and be able to cure things like blindness. And everyone's like, okay, bro, you let us know how that's going. Just tell us when there's an update. Well, Musk just dropped this bombshell. He says, quote, in the next 6 to 12 months, we're going to implant the first vision devices so that even if you're 100% blind from birth, we're going to write directly to your visual cortex and you are going to see. And he says that's just the beginning. In the long term, you'll have ultra HD resolution and real superpowers. You'll see an infrared, ultraviolet, and even radar, literally like a superhero. The future is no longer science fiction. It's Neuralink. Again, let's see it first, but when has he ever really failed when it comes to stuff that he's doing? And with the way that technology is progressing, and not just Elon Musk, but all of technology and AI and robotics, the robotics that are coming are going to be mind-blowing. And so hopefully this is true and they're on the verge of actually implanting this in the first humans. But can you imagine having infrared vision as part of your Neuralink? I mean, the laws, the stuff we're going to have to do. If you can see into everyone's house, if you can see through your average brassier, that's going to be a problem. Oh, I got Neuralink. Yeah, I got it the other day at Best Buy. Yeah, it's just a little chip. You actually self-install it right here in your head. It's pretty easy. Crazy times, people. Crazy times. Thank you so much for listening. Download, rate, and review. Tell a friend. Do all the things. I appreciate your support and listening. Glad I could get a guest on. It was still a little bit white knuckle because the internet is just not great when you're traveling. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Your devices run out of battery, it crashes mid-interview. Ah. But I try to deliver even when I'm traveling, and I appreciate you guys hanging with me. Thanks for listening. Have a great Wednesday, everybody, and we will see you next time. The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag. And why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.